Let's kick it off with a big aspect of reporting these days, the war in Iran. And we are actually taping this program a day before when Trump announced that he would be blowing up the bridges and who knows what else, and raining holy hell on Iran, bombing them back to the Stone Age. And so we don't know how that, I don't know how that turns out. This program will probably air on some of the community-owned stations that run it after that happens. So we hope we're not too out of date. We hope nothing terrible happens. We are wondering how the mainstream media will report it, and again, how they've been reporting it to date. Mark, you've been writing about this.
One of the big problems is that there aren't a lot of media, you know, in the war zone. And, you know, unlike, you know, with the Iraq war, there aren't embedded reporters, and there's just not a lot of access. Unfortunately, people are having to find out information when the government's not giving it to them. So it's going to be a real challenge. It has been so far to find out what's going on. That's, you know, you remember the Iranian girls' school bombing,
gosh, terrible.
You know, and how Trump lied about that. And finally, it was pretty much proven up that the U.S. did it.
So why is it that there are no media embedded in Iran during this war, as there have been in the past?
Because the Trump people don't want them in there. They you know, it's a real contrast to the Iraq war with George W. Bush, you know, kind of selling the war for a matter of months. They really went through, they got a congressional vote, they did all this stuff to sell the war. Trump, on the other hand, has simply said, you know, I feel like doing it, so I'm going to do it, you know, and not asking anyone's permission and not really trying to persuade the American people that it's a good idea.
So not even explaining
part of that,
why.
Part of that is not letting reporters kind of embed with the troops.
And does that apply to international media?
Yeah, I mean, yes. I mean, you know, they can try to get, you know, close to the war zone if they want, but they're not, they don't have the protection of the, you know, the U.S. Military. They're not taking them under their wing like they did in the Iraq war.
Yeah. Well, that sure makes it hard to get to the truth, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It does. But people, you know, have a lot of ingenious ways to do it. Satellite pictures, things like that. I mean, you know, the journalists can be pretty ingenious about that. Although some of the U.S. government, just in this last couple of days, has asked some of the satellite people to shut it off so that other people can't look at, you know, damage assessments and stuff like that.
Mark, I wanted to ask you about thus far what you've seen in the reporting. Who's doing it right? Who's doing it wrong? Or, I mean, it's just a broad question to you, but maybe sort of general impressions about the reporting thus far, whether it's legacy media or I know Courier and some outlets that you're affiliated with.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I have been for the last decade criticizing news coverage of Trump because I think that it's generally normalized him or just has not taken the hard view it should be taking over somebody who lies so much. And he does. He just lies all the time. But yeah. In this war, I think the coverage has been really quite good, quite aggressive, been asking the right questions about why are we here? What are we doing? What do we hope to accomplish? As, you know, in the bombing of the girls' school that I mentioned, I mean, that was finding out the truth, even though the government didn't want the truth found out.
Right.
And that was, you know, a lot of good media. The NPR was good. New York Times was good. I mean, there's just a lot of outlets out there, both legacy outlets and independent reporters who are doing a pretty good job. And when the Trump people weren't selling the war to the American public, they sure weren't selling it to the news media either.
So do you think the media have been, the legacy media in particular, have been kind of ticked off that they are being excluded from the usual embedment in a foreign engagement, and maybe they're for that reason digging in a little bit deeper in ways that they can and coming up with better stories? Am I just imagining more than is truthful there, or do you think that's part of it?
I don't really think that's it. I mean, the reality of the situation now is that so few legacy news outlets have the resources to do that anymore. I mean, funny thing, the sad and funny thing is that that even if the government let them do it, a lot of them, I don't think, would have the money to do it. It costs a lot of money. When I was on the Chicago Tribune Nation World desk at the time of the Iraq War, and you know, we had somebody in Baghdad, and we rented an armored car, and we had, you know, a security staff of several people in a house. It really cost us, you know, about a quarter of $1 million per person to have somebody in Baghdad during the Iraq War. So it just costs too much money now to where I just don't think that you'd have a whole lot of people participating in an embedding situation, even if it was available, because the news media, legacy and otherwise, is, you know, in much worse financial shape than it used to be.
Is there foreign media, Mark? I mean, you know, let's say Al Jazeera English. I mean, are there places that maybe, you know, listeners of this show or people who read Stop the Presses, you know, could go to that maybe have a little more access to the war zone, so to speak, whether the war zone is Gaza or southern Lebanon or Iran or Cuba, for that matter?
Yeah, there are a lot of different different fronts in this war, or in the various wars. Right. I mean, Al Jazeera is good, and I bet that they'd be, you know, I don't look at them too much sometimes, but they seem to be pretty reliable about what's happening in southern Lebanon. You know, the thing in southern Lebanon is that it's kind of a sideshow in this country, but I mean, it's a tremendous kind of human tragedy there. It's like about 1 million people have been routed out of their homes by this Israeli incursion. So it's terrible. It's, you know, it's terrible for human beings, for citizens, for civilians. But Al Jazeera is good. The Guardian is excellent. You know, it's one of the sad things that I've pointed out in as far as political coverage in this country is that The Guardian, which is based in the United Kingdom, is one of the most reliable news outlets covering American politics.
I agree with you 100%. Yeah.
You know, that says a lot about, and not good, about American
right,
media.
Right, yeah. And how is it? I mean, the Guardian seems to have the most precise coverage, the most extensive coverage. And also it's available. I mean, there are paywalls with the New York Times and WAPO and a bunch of other legacy media that you know, if you don't pay, you can't read. But the Guardian relies on donations and other sources of income. And they seem to provide really good stuff at no cost to a broad audience. How do they get away with that where other news outlets have failed?
Well, it's a foundation. You know, they started out with some money, and I think people appreciate them. You know, I send them money. You don't have to, though, as long as they have some sort of pitch. When you go to their website, they have a pitch that you have to, like, click to remove that to read a story. So if you find that annoying, then you can subscribe to them.
Go ahead.
No, I would just want to say that they have a different setup than a place like the Washington Post. I mean, one of the big crises in American journalism is the idea that the very best reporting and the most talent is often behind paywalls. So, you know, they're writing to 1% of the American people. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not ideal that the American people often get second or third hand stuff or just get, you know, rumors on social media and don't have access to the highest quality reporting available. Mm-hmm. You know, and there are some exceptions to that. AP is available without paying for it. It's at apnews.com. I think it's .com. And, you know, so there are some others. But and then you have a situation with the Washington Post where it's owned by Jeff Bezos.
Right, yeah, that's a big part of the problem.
And he has many other really much more important businesses to him, you know, such as Amazon and Blue Origin. And so he's really, the problem with him is that he's been willing to make the Washington Post, at least on the opinion side, behave the way Trump wants it to in order for him kind of buying off Trump to leave his more financially important businesses alone. And this is an essential problem with corporate media ownership.
And we've seen so much of that. I mean, look at CBS. CBS is being called the new Fox News. They put Barry Weiss in charge, and with the Ellison family now owning more and more legacy media. Where does it end? I mean, is it possible that the New York Times at some point is going to be owned by some billionaire with other interests?
Well, it's possible, but I mean, right now it's an independent company. They're also in the kind of good financial shape that a lot of other places are not. They're not a distressed property in any way. Mm-hmm. And so, so they may survive, but many others will not. And this is something that one of the terms for this is called media capture. And this is what happened in Hungary under Viktor Orban, when he was assembling power and becoming a strongman leader, is that he got all his pals to buy up all the media. And therefore, the opposition politicians couldn't get on TV, et cetera, et cetera. It was a huge problem, and it's starting to happen here in this country, with the Ellison family not only acquiring CBS, but also now has a stake in TikTok, and they're on track to own CNN if that deal goes through.
But hasn't this been going on for a while? I mean, I remember the day when the Des Moines Register, we had two newspapers in Des Moines, the Register and the Tribune, they merged. And then, of course, along comes Gannett, buys up the Register and a lot of other local papers. There is not a single person in Des Moines, who even the reporters who worked at the Register, who would not tell you that paper has declined precipitously over the years and to some extent due to Gannett's purchasing of it. So this problem has been going on for a long time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's been going on, I guess, since the introduction of the internet. I mean, that's part of the deal, and the way that classified advertising, which used to be a real cash cow for local newspapers, just went away. So, yeah, I mean, you look at it. I mean, here in Chicago, where I'm talking to you from, at the Chicago Tribune, in a 15-year period, they lost 85% of their staff.
Wow.
So you're not going to be able to do the same kind of job.
Right.
With that kind of thing happening. And so many local news outlets, newspapers, are owned by, hedge funds these days.
Yeah. Who owns the Chicago Tribune?
And just to say, those hedge funds don't care about journalism. They care about making money short term.
And who owns the Chicago Tribune? I'm not even know.
Alden, Global Capital. Mm-hmm. They're saying they own Denver Post, this and that. They're known as vulture capitalists because what they do is go into a place, a newspaper that's fairly distressed, and buy it up. They cut the staff dramatically. They jack up the subscription rates dramatically. And people who, it's their habit to buy a newspaper every day and read it, and so they're willing to pay the higher prices, or it's on their credit card so they don't even notice when the price goes up. But that way, Alden Global Capital makes a big score, makes a bunch of money. Mm-hmm. I don't think they care if they're around in 10 years. Mm-hmm. I think they feel like that they will make so much money before they go out of business that it'll be well worth their while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mark, I was going to ask about, too, even sometimes when you go to news stories about our head of government, whether it's deep dives into the Epstein files and things like that, you have some of that in, New York or in Harper's, Atlantic and things like that. But oftentimes I'm finding that foreign media seems to be doing a deeper dive into the upper echelons of our government and the things that are happening. I don't know if that's your experience as somebody who looks at media.
Well, I mean, I read The Guardian and I read The Independent, I mean, there's The Times of London, too. I don't read that much, but in the Daily Telegraph, there's fairly robust media in the UK, and it's always been, it's always been well supported. I think that the real problem is not that the media is not available; it's just that you have to pay for it, and that's just the way the business model has changed. It used to be that the advertising paid for it; that doesn't pay for it anymore. You have to reader revenue is the way it has to go now. You have to pay for your news. Which isn't bad. I mean, you pay for your milk and you pay for your beer, but So paying for your news shouldn't be a problem, but it's just not the model that anyone's used to. So very few people subscribe.
Mark, we got to run to a short break. Folks, Mark Jacobs with us along with Jeffrey Weiss.